I steered the angry banker to the rear cell and unlocked it and retrieved the satchel and carried it to the front office and handed it to him.
What on earth is this? I've never seen this satchel in my life.
I sure get tired of bankers now and then. I unbuckled the thing and shoved it at him. He dipped his fingers in there like he was expecting them to get burned and pulled out some 50s. He studied them and studied the satchel and poked around in there and stared.
Where's the gold?
We're working on it.
Why didn't you get this to me sooner? What's it doing here? Why didn't you bring it to the bank? Is this all of it?
I showed him Rusty's accounting.
Yes, that's the currency, but where's the gold? You didn't do your job. Where did you get this?
It was in the undies. He jerked his hand from the bag. Go give Delphinium a kiss. He stared at me like I was some kind of worm, which I am. Rusty relit his stogie and smiled. It didn't take but a few minutes before a mess of them officials trooped in. Hubert Sanders was leading the pack, and right behind him were Pima County's virtuous politicians, Reggie Thimble and Ziggy Camp, along with Mayor George Waller and Lawyer Stokes.
Where did you get this?
In the undies.
Where's the gold?
I haven't the faintest notion, but I think I know who got it.
Who got it?
Your former employees, Ike Berg and Luke the Butcher.
Why haven't you arrested them?
Well, it's on my mind.
You don't have a mind. Go get them!
Wait! I need him here to guard this cash. I have no safe. Its door won't shut. These bills are naked to the world.
You could store it in a jail cell until you get a new safe.
I don't want bedbugs eating the new 50s.
You could just give it all to Delphinium. She can tuck it down her dress and no one will ever get it.
Thimble, fire that man!
Actually, that's a good idea, Hubert. You just give the bills to Mrs. Sanders, they'll be safe as Gibraltar.
That's the first intelligent thing ever to issue from Pickens' mouth.
My ma used to say that nothing could ever get into a whalebone corset. Of course, she was talking about men.
You have insulted my wife!
Well, she'll keep all them 50s warm. Nothing like hot money.
We'll give it to the postmaster. Alphonse Smythe has a small lockbox.
Oh, you could keep it in the rear cell next to the gun cotton.
Gun cotton?
Yep. Gun cotton and blasting oil, taken off of the late Jardine. If he'd been shot 10 inches lower, it would have blown up the robbers.
Why isn't it 3 miles out of town?
Maybe some drunk will polish it off. He'll think it's old crabapple, schnapps. He could blast himself to smithereens if he lights up a cheroot.
Gun cotton? Doesn't that stuff blow if someone looks at it cross-eyed?
I'll show you.
I'm getting out of here.
So am I. I have to find them two and get the gold.
No, you don't. I've got no place to keep it secure. You wait until they deliver a new safe to my bank.
You don't want me to fetch Iceberg and the Butcher in? All them politicians, they just stared at each other. You don't want me to arrest them? Get the gold they took?
Of course we do. Arrest those crooks and get the gold back.
You should have done it already. You've done a half-assed job. That's been the whole trouble with you all along. If you'd have done it right, you would have come back with all the loot, not just part of it.
You want to join my posse?
I'm sure you can manage, Pickens.
I'd like you and Lawyer Stokes on my posse. Politicians make the best posse of all.
What for?
So you can talk Iceberg and the Butcher into giving up.
Yes, I'd be excellent at that, but I have a lame knee and can't ride more than a few minutes.
I've got bursitis of my elbows. Doc Harrison tells me not to board a horse for the next 3 years.
I'm subject to seizures on horseback. It's the saddest thing. I get onto a nag and get all seized up. Doc Harrison says it's congenital.
I need to keep Doubtful prosperous and moral. What would Doubtful do without me?
With that, them Pauls quit me and headed into the bright day. Rusty, he was smirking at me. Guess I'm still a one-man posse.
And before you go, you got any notion how all this worked? We got greenbacks, a blown safe, undies, and gun cotton.
I don't know yet. It looks like Jardine slid out of a show when most of the town was in the opera house and cracked the safe and hid the cash in those satchels of undies and the gold in the false bottom of the boot.
You think the whole company was crooked?
I pulled gray undies out of them bags. These are just rags or spares. I don't think these belong to anyone at all except Jardine.
Are you an expert on undies?
Well, these here are grimy.
Showgirls are grimy?
No, not Ambrosia. She was clean. I think showgirls aren't grimy. Too many people would see the dirt. You can't expose acres of grimy flesh.
Oh, you got me there.
I think Jardine owned all these satchels and trunks, and he told people they were all for spare clothing for his show, but he really wanted them to hide his loot.
Didn't work this time. He's dead. Iceberg figured out where he kept the gold, and they got it, and didn't hardly look for the greenbacks.
Iceberg's real smart. He got ahead of me on Jardine. I thought the little twerp was up and up.
Yeah, and you thought Iceberg was up and up.
I never laid claim to smart.
You going out now? Get the gold?
I'm the posse. It's not the gold that gets to me. It's two murders. Killing my horse Critter, which is pretty near a third murder, and robbing me and the stagecoach and all. If I get the gold, that's fine. But whoever killed Critter, he's gonna swing. I'll see you around.
I've gotta watch this.
No, you don't. You go play with the gun, Cotton. Get yourself blown to bits. I stepped out and eyed that yeller broken tooth nag and looked him over real good. He stared back. I anchored my bedroll behind the cantle and decided I was ready as I'd ever get. So I untied the reins and hit the bull. And he took off, crow-hopping, whirling, and bucking.
Jesus Mary Joseph!
The miracle horse quieted right down. The nag rotated his ears back, checking to hear any further instruction. Rusty, he just shook his head and went back inside to flirt with the nitro. Turk's nag swung his head around and gave me the eye, and then we trotted smartly out of town. I took him out that same road, and when we got to the robbery site, I began running circles, looking for hoof prints leading in and out of there. It was pretty dry and hot, and I didn't scare up much at first, but I kept spiraling outward and finally did connect with some faint tracks out of the north, maybe up around Douglas or Casper or somewhere over there. There sure was a mess of open country around there, and looking for them two bastards would be like hunting mosquitoes. But then the tracks began to curve west, and finally southwest toward Medicine Bow County, where Sheriff Ike Berg once was the law. There appeared to be three sets of prints, one with narrow hooves, probably a pack mule. So Berg was heading for home turf. I wondered if he was still sheriff down there. I hadn't heard a thing. That sure was a lonely ride. I was working toward a gold sunset through a vast land, with distant mountain ranges and arid flats sliced by washes where anyone could hide. I lost the trail now and then, when cattle stomped it out, but I knew where them two was heading. Medicine City, Ike Berg's old haunt, where he was sheriff for years. I kept on going, heading for Medicine City now, and not worrying about hunting down hoof prints. I crossed the line somewhere in there, and now my Puma County badge was no good, so I pocketed it. If Berg was wearing a star, he'd have the law on his side, such as it was. In Medicine Bow County, he was about the only law around, so he always did what he felt like doing. I rode straight over a long hogback and descended into the broad valley where Medicine City slumbered. It mostly catered to ranch owners. It was just about the deadest place in Wyoming. It was half desert and half jackrabbit. The people there all tried suicide after a few months, and some succeeded. Thanks to Berg, there wasn't even a saloon, and the only restaurant in town opened for lunch and then quit so the owner could go home for supper. There wasn't even a church, because no one felt the need. Someone in Medicine City had an alkali spring and bottled the water as a tonic. That's how the town got its name. It was supposed to improve the bowels and bring a little color to the flesh. The population of Medicine City was growing a bit because word got around that it cured melancholia. All them that felt blue gravitated there, hoping to improve, but once they got there, they discovered they was no different than anyone else. It had been 10 years since anyone happy had lived in Medicine City. I rode in there to the sound of silence. There wasn't a mutt around. Medicine City had no small children, so it had no schools. Women were scarce. I rode straight down the main drag, since there wasn't hardly no side streets. Medicine City was just a single stretch of false front, whitewashed wooden structures, plus the town cemetery that was mostly empty and full of weeds. Half them structures had nothing in them but pack rats. But down at the far end was the log courthouse of Medicine Bow County, and a stuccoed up jailhouse that was where Ike Berg sheriffed, or used to. He might be in there, so I looked around real sharp before I steered that livery stable nag over to the hitch rail. If he was in there, I was going to arrest him, and ditto for the butcher. And it didn't matter that my star was no good here. I didn't know how I'd get them back to Puma County, but I would. I tied up that nag and eased toward a barred window and peered in real quick. There was some fat fella sitting in there, his boots on the desk, his spurs dug into the top. It wasn't anyone I was looking for, but maybe that was good. I saw a square badge on him, the kind mostly wore by deputies, but that was good too. So I meandered in there and took the measure of the man, who eyed me like I was a tarantula. I'm looking for Ike Berg.
Not here.
Where is he?
Took a leave.
He the sheriff?
Imagine so. He ain't said otherwise.
You seen a blocky fella known as Luke the Butcher?
He ain't around either.
What's your name?
Ernest Howitzer.
I'm, Cotton Pickens, sheriff over in Puma County.
No, you ain't. You're a horse thief.
What are you talking about?
That there horse? That's the best known horse in Wyoming.
That's a Turk's livery barn nag.
No, that's Jesus, Mary, Joseph, and you've took him. You're under arrest.
Took him? Turk rented him to me.
You stole the most famous horse in history.
He had a 6-gun out and aimed at my belly button almost before I could get a handle on what was happening. He nodded me toward the single iron-barred cell.
Get in there.
You know who I am. I'm the sheriff of Puma County, and if you discharge that piece in my direction, you'll swing. He wavered a moment. I'm gonna reach real slow inside my shirt pocket, and I'm gonna pull out a star, and I'm gonna pin the star on my shirt. I did so, wondering if the BB brain would shoot. But he didn't. And pretty quick he saw the star that said Sheriff, Puma County, Wyoming on it, and slowly lowered his piece.
How come you got that horse? There's a reward for that horse.
Well, that's news to me.
Well, I've always wanted to ride that horse. I've heard about it for 3 years. That horse has started more bar fights and saloon brawls than any horse alive.
You want to ride him? Let's go out and you can ride him.
He sort of kills, don't he?
Yep.
He sort of bites, don't he?
Yep.
When you land on the saddle horn, your privates are done for, ain't they?
That's the horse, all right.
Oh, I'm a fool.
We headed out to the clay road, and I undid the reins from the hitching post and handed them to him. He looked a little green, but he was game. Stepped aboard. And that nag erupted like nothing I'd ever seen before. Crow hopping and whirling.
Jesus, Mary, Joseph!
That miracle nag, it quit right there, and a couple seconds later, that horse was the gentlest piece of horse flesh in Medicine Bow County. Howitzer rode him up and down and around, and the horse responded instantly, just as sweet as it gets. Finally, Howitzer rode him back to the rail. He got off and tied the reins to the hitching post, shaking his head.
Oh, I've been waiting all my life for that. Now I got a story to tell, but no one will believe it. That's the trouble with this town. No one believes anything.
He headed back inside where it was cooler, and we settled down.
You want some Java? I could make some.
Yeah, it gives me the fits, except early in the morning.
Sends me to the outhouse.
You the law here now?
Yep, until Sheriff Berg gets back. But there's some wondering if he will. He put me in charge and took off and said he was taking a break for a few weeks, and that's the last anyone's seen of him, so I'm it. I've got the whole county, and I don't even have a deputy of my own. So, I'll keep office 10 hours a day, and there's no law the other 14.
Well, that's the way law should be. My theory is that criminals should do all their stuff by daylight so everyone can sleep at night.
Well, no one's ever woke me up since I've been filling this chair.
Well, maybe Medicine Bow County's got no criminals in it.
That's an entertaining idea.
I'm looking for a gent named Luke the Butcher. I got a score to settle with him.
Oh, him? He was in that cell there. And one day Ike Berg let him loose. Well, I've never seen him since.
What was he in for?
Oh, you name it, you got it.
And Berg let him out?
In one day, out the next.
Was he actually a butcher?
Well, that's his trade. But he got to carving on a lot more than beef. He cut the ears off some rancher he didn't like and killed a few cows.
Rustler?
Ah, sort of. Mostly he wanted supper, and if one wasn't on a plate in front of him, he went off and butchered his supper.
Did Berg ever say why he sprung him?
Nary a word, Pickens. Ike Berg, he just kept his mouth shut. He never spoke more than 2 words to anyone. He just ghosted around the county, and maybe still is. Look, he's my boss. He could take my badge back.
Did he say where he was going when he left?
Nope. Well, he was the quietest man around.
If them two show up here, would you mind putting them in that cell?
Oh, you got warrants?
Nope, but I got a grudge or two. And if I rattle the butcher hard enough, I'll shake a couple of murders out of them over in my county.
Why do I believe you?
He butchered my horse, so I'm looking to butcher him.
What am I going to do about that horse out there? There's a $500 reward for him. Down to Laramie. That's where the owner is.
He showed me a reward sheet with a description of the miracle horse in large print. That was the horse, all right. You got a horse for me? One I can give to the livery barn man in Doubtful?
What are you looking at?
You give me a real good horse, you take this one and get him back to the owner and collect your $500. You can buy yourself a new horse.
You mean you won't ride him down there yourself?
I got things to do. The horse you give me's got to be as good as that one out there. It's going to the livery man who rented that one to me. And I want that Dodger so I can show him it was a stolen horse he couldn't keep. Howitzer stared outside, stared at the nag, stared at me.
All right, damn it.
And you write it up good. And I'd better like the one you're going to give me or it's no deal. He wrote out a bill of sale for a 3-year-old gelding in that curvy longhand. You mind reading that to me? My eyesight's a bit weak.
I, Ernest Howitzer, sell a 3-year-old red roan gelding with a slash Q brand on left thigh to Sheriff Cotton Pickens.
Let's go see your nag. We hiked over to a place with a weathered sign that said Horses Bought and Sold, Boarded and Rented, Rambo McCoy Prop. There wasn't hardly anyone in there, and not many nags either. Medicine City was giving me the willies. Howitzer headed for a stall with a strawberry roan in it, bridled him, and backed him out. It was a decent-looking nag, except for a Roman nose. The deputy saddled him up and handed the reins to me. I looked at the hooves first, and the hocks. An unsound horse wasn't worth beans to anyone. This one was well shod, had no hoof cracks, no splints, no trouble that I could see. I got onto him and rode him away from the stable, and the nag didn't fight me. I rode him up that desolate main drag, and the horse moved along, shifting gates when I put heel to flank, and at the edge of town, I settled him into a lope for a while. He wasn't smooth and bounced me some, but he'd do. So I took him back. Shook hands with the deputy. We switched saddles, and I was fixing to ride out of that cussed town when I saw a nag in the pen in the back that plain shook me. I swore I was studying critter. I walked out to the pen and eyed that beast. He was younger, maybe a 3-year-old. He sure stabbed at something in my heart. You know anything about him?
He's mine. Green broke. Just started.
He looked like one of mine got killed a while ago.
Killed?
Throat cut by Luke the Butcher.
You know that for sure?
Nope.
You want that one?
I can't afford a horse now. I got robbed and Doubtful, and I might not have a job for long.
He's yours if you want him.
Nah.
Take him! I'm collecting the $500 reward. And that's enough to buy me 2 good horses and have half left over.
I stared at that young critter, feeling real strange. It was like maybe I'd betray the real critter if I took this one.
Ride him if you want.
We saddled him up, and he was sort of dumb, but I didn't mind. I pulled and hauled him around for 10 minutes. He didn't pitch. He was eager. Next I knew, I had another bill of sale in my hand, and a horse that might turn into a new critter if I was lucky. That new one wouldn't replace Critter. Nothing could. Critter was one of a kind. But we have to get past what we've lost and get on with life, and this new one might work out. I got another bill of sale out of Howitzer, and he threw in a halter and a lead rope, and I was ready to ditch that place. I wouldn't recommend Medicine City to anyone except maybe Hubert Sanders. In fact, I thought I'd tell him to move his bank over there. Deputy, if you see Luke the Butcher around here, would you send for me?
If you want him, I'll make sure you get him.
I do. Real bad. We shook on it. I eyed that yellow miracle horse, which was still tied at the hitch rail. You're not worth $500. I rode out of Medicine City leading the horse, wondering if I should call him Critter. I decided I'd wait. The real Critter was real ornery, and if this one wasn't, I sure wasn't going to give him the same name. I didn't find my quarry around there, but I'd keep looking. Somewhere around there was a crooked sheriff and a common criminal. I kept a sharp eye out, but knew my chances were pretty slim. The strawberry roan was a good horse, and Turk would be pleased to get a trade for the stolen nag. It would be 2 days of hard riding to get back to Doubtful, and I'd have to find a meal somewhere or ride on a real empty belly. I got into the rhythm of it, eating up the miles. Wyoming was a big and good land with great arid flats and forested mountains. I got as far as the Pima County line that day, camped at an alkali spring that would clean out my innards, and spent a hungry night while the horses grazed on thin, short grass around the spring. The next dawn, I got off fast, knowing it would be a hot day and Wyoming could turn into a frying pan fast. Them days, I'd just as soon move to Canada. So I took off at first light, and we covered ground fast until mid-morning, when it got heated up and the horizons shimmered and the horses began to drag. I kept going at a real slow pace and made it to Doubtful early afternoon while it was so hot that not even a dog was out. Rusty, he was sleeping in my chair, and woke up with a start as I came in.
Oh, how'd the posse go?
It didn't. What's new here?
Oh, the new show Royal Arabian Nights came in, and Ambrosia's in it. She said she hired on as a harem wife.
She's gonna be wearing something this time?
Not much. They open tonight, and we can find out.
I led them nags over to Turk's livery barn. He saw me coming and stared at one nag and then the other. Jesus Mary Joseph was a stolen horse, but I got you another. It took some explaining, and I showed him the flyer. He eyed the strawberry roan, rode him a little, accepted the bill of sale, and nodded. That was as much of a thanks as I'd ever get out of Turk. I arranged to board the colt.
He looks like Critter, all right.
Oh, I ain't named him yet. If he's as ornery as Critter, I might call him Critter.
You catch any criminals?
They're still loose.
Maybe the new show's full of them.
I'm gonna fetch a nap and then find out. Turk, he was smiling real evil. Soon as I got back to Belle's boarding house, she was after me for back rent. I'll pay you as fast as the county pays me. I got them greenbacks to the bank, and they'll soon go into pay envelopes.
Yeah? And what about the gold? You let that slide through your fingers.
Well, I haven't seen a double eagle yet, but when I fetch the gold, you'll know about it.
Yeah? When you get that gold, I'll eat my shirt.
If I don't get it, I'll eat my underdrawers.
Is that a promise?
They ain't fit for eating. They don't get washed but once a month. But I'll eat one square inch. She smiled and patted me on the cheek. That was Belle for you. After resting up a mite, I headed toward Ralston's place. Sure enough, the Watch and Ward Society was back trying to shut down the new show. And there was Delphinium Sanders leading the charge, waving a big hand-lettered sign. And she had all her biddies and a few male biddies with her, too. But the ticket line was full. Them cowboys didn't pay much heed to her, and they were stepping right up to the ticket window and buying. I guess Sanders had got the greenbacks out around town fast, because there was some cash showing now, after the town pretty near starved for a few days. Delphinium Sanders spotted me near the box office. She whacked me over the head with her sign.
Take me. Arrest me.
I think you should be in the harem scene. She assaulted me again with her sheet of pasteboard while the people in line were elbowing one another and enjoying the show.
Take me away from this vice. This town is a cesspool.
I'd like to see the belly dancers.
No.
She whacked me again. She was getting real serious about getting hauled off. You wouldn't want to sit in a cell with bedbugs and gun cotton and nitro in it.
What's that?
You could blow yourself up in half the town.
If that's what it takes, arrest me.
You'd like to see all them eunuchs in there.
What are they?
Beats me. Maybe they're lacking a few parts.
Well, so are you. Namely, brains.
She was trying real hard to get hauled off, but I just ignored her. I headed in and found the opera house mostly filled up and ready to go. Just because I was sheriff, I headed through a door at the side which would take me backstage and watched for a while, enjoying them harem wives and belly dancers and some feller dressed up as a chic barbouze. What I wanted to see was the masked executioner, but he didn't show up. I suppose he was down in his dressing room sharpening his scimitar. But I got a look at the fire eater and the sword swallower. They sure were peculiar. Oh, them harem girls were pretty, with big gauzy white pantaloons and little vest with a mess of gold braid and not much under them except pure girl. They wore real colorful stuff too, oranges and reds and golds you hardly ever saw on the street. One feller had a green pillbox on his head. I wanted to see them eunuchs, but so far they were all hiding. I peered out of the curtain a little and saw some feller in a robe of Araby, or whatever they wore. He lit all the foot lamps until the reflectors were tossing light onto the stage. Just then, I stared at a harem girl, and she stared back.
Ambrosia!
I'm not Ambrosia anymore. I'm Zelda Xanadu.
How come?
We ran into this company in Laramie. They wanted girls, so I hired on.
You're in the harem scene?
Listen, Sheriff, I need to talk to you. There's trouble around here, and I'm scared.
Well, fire away. She peered around fearfully and motioned me to the stage door leading to the alley, and we stepped outside into the summer twilight.
You know when we were robbed? When Jardine was killed? I got a good look at one, even if it was only by lantern light. He had a way of walking. He was sort of square and muscular and heaved the bags off the coach and was sort of taking orders from the thin one with the reedy voice.
The butcher.
He's hired on too. He's the masked executioner.
Here? In the show?
Yes, and I'm the virgin tonight.
You couldn't be.
A girl who refuses to marry the sheik and gets beheaded.
Beheaded?
Oh, it's a stage trick. The head is paper mache with a wig on. He brings his sword down and then picks up the head. Only he has to be real careful, you know? I mean, he has to do it just right. And he knows I know who he is. The robber of Jardine's coach. Oh, he's been staring at me ever since we both joined. And I'm afraid it looked like a horrible accident.
Listen, I'm staying right here. When he comes out, I'll collar him even before the scene. Maybe it'll mess up the show, but I'm gonna lay my hands on him and drag him out of here before you lose your head and he's calling it an accident. I'll do my best, but if there's trouble, head into the audience. Don't stay backstage. Get out where it's safe, right there with the cowboys.
You're not sure?
I'd like some help, but there ain't any. He's a tough little thug. She thought about that, and then we slipped back into the theater. The curtain had gone up on a line of harem girls and the juggler, who was tossing three balls all over the place. It sure was different, watching from backstage. I could see them gals and the juggler, and then there was a dance done by the harem girls. Then came the sword swallower, and I swear that little freak pumped about a foot of steel blade down his gullet and looked like he'd spill blood all over the planks. But somehow he got it out safe, and no one clapped. Not one cowboy liked sword swallowers. I didn't much care for the act myself. But then came the fire eater, and how that feller, dressed up in gold braid, could blow flame out of his mouth like that, I'd never know. He just lowered that flame down in there and sent a plume of it at the audience. Danged if I could figure it out. I'd have burnt myself to ash, cooked my tongue, and cracked my molars doing what he did. How could anyone eat fire anyway? He must have been hot-tempered. My ma told me to blow out the candles on my birthday cake, not swallow them. I just stayed there backstage, watching everything, and no one seemed to mind. Once in a while, I could see all them cowboys, but it was pretty dark. This show wasn't as well lit as the Follies. Next was the big harem scene, and I crowded close as I could to get a good gander at all them ladies. They were sprawled out there on big pillows and divans, wearing gauzy pantaloons and little vests with a lot of themselves showing. They were mostly just lying around awaiting the sheik, but there were some fellas dressed in big diapers and turbans waving fans at the gals. Well, that was a good idea because it was hot, and the fellas in diapers were stirring the air real good. I finally figured out that those gents were the eunuchs, though no one told me what one of them was or how he got that way. But they mostly waved their fans and pretended not to be interested in the ladies, and I thought maybe I was missing something, and I'd have to ask what one was. Maybe Lawyer Stokes would tell me if I asked him. At last, Sheik Barbus came trotting out. He was a fierce customer, all right, with a lot of black hair and gold pantaloons and bare arms and a white vest sort of like the ones worn by the ladies. But now he circled around, eyeing them women, who were all seeking his attention. Man, he was a lucky feller, and I thought maybe I'd like to be a sheik. Some of them got up and began pawing him and smiling and showing a lot of teeth, and the music gets bigger and bigger until finally there's a clear winner, a babe with long brown hair, real curvy, and the sheik smiles, grabs her by her top knot, and hauls her away. I wanted to know what the sheik and that lady were doing, but when I got over there, they had parted. I thought maybe the way they'd gotten steamed up, they would retire somewhere. but it was nothing but show. And that's why show business is nothing but a big fraud. Then some feller in a turban came out on stage.
This maiden had refused the sheik's hand in marriage for 1,000 days. And now she will be taken to this wooden block and beheaded for resisting the sheik.
Well, that was pretty entertaining, and the audience got real quiet. And then Ambrosia stepped out, looking real scared, dragged by two of them big eunuchs. I shouldn't call her Ambrosia because she was Zelda Xanadu now, but anyway, they pushed her down on the chopping block so her neck and head's over the edge, and out comes the masked executioner, and he's got a great big scimitar, one of them steel blades with funny lines to it. And he's swinging that thing around real bad. And I took a close look, and it's Luke the Butcher behind that mask, and maybe he's gonna kill the witness who figured out who shot Jardine, so I went after him. I grabbed one of them ostrich feather fans and headed toward him. And the whole audience rose up as I moved in on the masked executioner. He sure was slinging his big blade around. It whipped past me back and forth, clipping ostrich feathers, and he was driving me back off stage. And I was circling around, looking for my chance. That shiny blade swung back and forth, and I edged back. He had me. Then two things happened. Tripped on something, and Zelda Xanadu grabbed the butcher by the leg and twisted, putting him off balance. He staggered, his blade ran wide, and I rolled up and into him and grabbed that arm waving the scimitar around, and now it was me fighting for my life. There's nothing like a swinging broadsword to inspire a man. I just boiled into a frenzy, and pretty soon I got the blade out of his paw. I was pounding on him real hard, and Zelda Xanadu was on her knees biting the leg of the masked executioner. He didn't give up easy. He landed a kidney punch on me, but I pressed a forearm into his neck until he gagged. And finally, it was over. I got him. Out there, the audience was standing. They thought I was the star of the show and the best act at Ralston's Opera House. I hauled that bastard to his feet. I'd got the killer of Critter, the killer of Jardine, the killer of the advanced man Pinky Pearl, the feller that mugged me, and one of the fellers that robbed the stagecoach. I turned to all them eunuchs. Get on with the show. The beheading's over. Backstage, I patted down that piece of wormy beef and found two more toad stabbers on it. The audience was tearing up the place, but then Ralston went out on stage.
Well, that was the best act we've ever seen, and it starred our own sheriff. And now we'll go on to the next act, the juggler.
I hauled that chunk of rotten meat to the jailhouse. Rusty wasn't around, but I didn't need him. I tossed Luke the Butcher into the chair in front of my desk. Tonk, where's Iceberg? Where's the gold? Who'd you kill? Who put you onto it? Why'd you kill that advanced man, Pinky Pearl? The butcher had started to sweat, and his slimy shirt was getting soaked. Why'd you kill my horse? Why'd you rob me on the street? Why'd you kill Jardine? Who put you up to it? The butcher's face began to drip, and sweat was running down his cheeks. Where's Iceberg? Where's the gold? That gal was a witness. She knew you'd killed Jardine, so you was gonna cut her head off right there on stage in Vamoose. I could see this was going nowhere, and I was feeling a little impatient. So I grabbed him by the shirt again, wary of him now because he was halfway recovered, and I dragged him back to the second cell and tossed him in and locked the door. He sat down on the bunk. Now talk. You see that over in the next cell? That's Jardine's gun cotton and blasting oil. I took it out of his suit coat. If you'd shot him a little lower, we'd have picked up your pieces and planted them. That caught his attention. Sure enough, there in the next cell was a small flask of the nitro and the tin of gun cotton, sitting real quiet. Safest place in town to keep that stuff. But I tell you what, I'm gonna put a bullet in that gun cotton and it'll blow that nitro and you'll be chipped beef.
You wouldn't.
Try me.
But you'd kill yourself.
Try me. I lifted my six gun and shot at the wall a few feet left of the nitro. The shot chipped some rock off the wall. The butcher covered his ears and closed his eyes, And when he discovered he was still alive, he started shaking. All right, start yapping or I'll blow the place up. The wormy beef was oozing out his lard. Why'd you mug me?
Iceberg put me up to it. He wanted a crime wave.
He wanted to be sheriff here.
That banker's wife, Delphinium, she wanted to get rid of you.
Well, she put him up to it?
She told him to employ any means, but don't tell her about it.
Well, why'd you kill that advance man for the folly?
To make a crime wave.
Make a crime wave? You'd kill a man for that? You killed my horse.
Yeah, that was easy. Got your goat, didn't it?
I fired another round, this time missing his head. The racket scared the crap out of him. You killed Jardine.
He was really a safe cracker. He blew the bank safe in the middle of his show.
Where's the gold?
Iceberg double-crossed me. He's gone.
Where's the gold, damn it? I pointed my revolver straight at the flask of nitro in the next cell.
Don't! I don't have it. Iceberg don't have it either. The bank's got it back. Delphinium's got it.
You telling me that Sanders got that gold?
You messed everything up and Iceberg's on the lam.
Where's Iceberg?
He and Delphinium are gonna take off with the gold. She can't stand Doubtful and she can't stand her old man.
Say that again, damn it.
She and Iceberg, they're in love. They're gonna ditch Doubtful and live somewhere nice like Cicero, Illinois.
Where's he right now?
How should I know?
What does that woman see in that man?
They hate mating. They hate lust, and they want to spend their life together hating lust and attacking evil.
Does her husband have the gold?
Nah, she's got it, and the Iceberg's got it. He took it out of the boot.
And missed the bills.
He didn't care. He got what he wanted.
Delphinium.
Some people got bad taste.
That was all I needed from that buzzard. I left him in the cell where he could contemplate his own death, and I headed into the night. They'd be building a gallows for that one soon enough. I locked the front door of the jailhouse tight just in case Iceberg was floating around. I didn't know where to find him, but I had a notion the bank gold was out in that carriage house on Sanders' place on the north edge of town. Delphinium was sure entertaining. She'd set in motion mayhem and murder, and for what? To put me out of office and clamp Doubtful in her own moralistic vice. If that twice-stolen gold was there, I'd be putting her in the other cell, which would probably terrify the butcher even more than nitroglycerin. Delphinium was sure a strange lady. The place was dark. I tried the front door, waited, and tried it again. No one showed up. I circled around the building in moonlight. Sanders! Mrs. Sanders! The windows upstairs were open to the July breeze, but no one answered my call. I thought maybe something was very wrong, and I decided it wasn't smart to stand around in moonlight, so I headed for the carriage house and peered in. The buggy was gone, and so was the dray. I studied the shadows, not seeing anyone. I began checking everything, the loft, the servant quarters, the stalls, quietly poking around for gold. Harness in the harness room was gone. I lit a lamp and did a thorough search. And after an hour or so, I gave up and returned to the house. Sanders! Mrs. Sanders! No one answered. And I finally pushed inside, lit a lantern, and began a search. I didn't have far to look. Hubert Sanders, in his bathrobe, lay on the parlor floor, a bullet hole through his mouth, dead. The last person to die from a bullet in the mouth was Jardine. So Iceberg had been here, and Mrs. Sanders, the buggy, the dray, and harness were all gone. I lit more lamps in that dreary house. It belonged to the most prominent couple in Doubtful, and look what it had come to. Gold was only part of it. Mrs. Sanders was determined to spread her misery from one end of the earth to the other, and she'd found a willing ally in Iceberg, another of those persons who resented anyone who was cheerful or happy. Hubert shared some of that too, but he wasn't at the heart of this, and now he lay dead from a single shot through the mouth, like Jardine. I turned Sanders over a little, and sure enough, there was an exit wound. There'd be a bullet buried in a wall somewhere, and I'd find it, and maybe it would match the caliber of Ike Berg's revolver. I didn't see the bullet hole offhand, but lamplight isn't much good for finding things like that. I felt sorry for the man, mostly because he'd been stuck all his good and faithful life to a terrible mate, who never knew what love was or what good companionship could be. I peered around there, wondering if I'd missed something, and it turned out that I had. The revolver on the parlor carpet gleamed dully. I picked it up. It had one shot fired from it, and it was real clean, left there by someone who liked to keep a weapon in prime shape, like the sheriff of Medicine Bow County. I tucked it into my belt and hiked down into town and found a lamp still lit at Maxwell's funeral parlor. He opened the door and stink-eyed me. "Pick up Hubert Sanders. He's dead in his parlor. Delphinium's gone."
"Heart attack?"
"Murder."
"No, not Hubert."
"He's dead, and a bullet did it. This is the weapon. You ever seen it before?"
"Could be anyone's."
"A 38 caliber Smith & Wesson with a short barrel?"
"I'll get the hearse. He's king of doubtful. It'll take a while."
"Get him with a one-horse wagon. I don't have time."
"Then who's paying?"
"Delphinium when I catch her and before she hangs."
"I heard there was a commotion at the opera house."
"You heard right."
"Well, this is a sad night. Another immoral show at Ralston's Opera House."
"Yeah, it's really a black eye on this moral town." I left him there, chewing on the evil that had come upon Doubtful. I had things to do. First was to fetch Rusty from his slumbers, and second was to go after the criminals in that buggy. That wouldn't be easy, but nothing ever was easy. Rusty simply wouldn't wake up. He'd been on duty for days, and now he just yawned and muttered. I didn't know what to do. I couldn't leave Doubtful without a lawman, especially with a fresh murder. But then I realized that night riding wouldn't get me anywhere. I'd have to go after Iceberg and Delphinium by daylight. I found Ralston in his dim-lit office. The theater had emptied. The troupe had gone to bed. He reached for a small revolver as I entered, and then relaxed.
"Glad you're here. You were the star of the show."
I told him that I'd nailed the butcher and got a confession out of him, too. And then I told him the rest. The banker dead in his parlor, Delphinium missing, the Sanders buggy and Dre with her. Probably heading for the railroad. If I had a wire, I'd send a bulletin and every train in both directions would be searched. But I don't. Nearest telegraph's 50 miles away. The problem is, I don't know what direction they went. In the morning, I might find iron tire tracks heading north toward Montana.
"Hubert dead. Oh, I'm sorry. He didn't like my theater, but he was a good man. And his bank held this town together. Now Doubtful's in trouble. No bank. Its gold is gone. Maybe the bank's directors could keep it afloat, but not with half its assets heading out of town. Oh, Doubtful is doomed. My opera house is doomed. Without a solvent bank, not one business here is going to survive."
"I was gonna get some sleep, but you just changed my mind for me. I'm heading out tonight." I headed for Turk's, lit a lamp, and eyed that green broke beast in the stall, the one that might earn himself the name of Critter. This was going to be an entertainment. I eased into the stall, avoided a hoof aimed at my groin, pushed his head back when he tried to bite, and finally got a bridle over him and stuffed the bit into his miserable mouth. He sawed his head up and down trying to spit it out. Greenbroke was not exactly accurate. He wasn't hardly broke at all. But I got a saddle blanket on him and managed to avoid getting killed when he reared up and planned to pound me into the straw. But he was acting like Critter all right. So I just saddled him up and drew the girth strap tight and led him out into the aisle to look him over. "You're getting there." I blew out the light, led him into the yard, and stepped aboard. He stood real still. I nudged him with my boots. He refused to move. I slapped his croup, and he took one step. "You ain't ever gonna be Critter if you quit before you start. You got a lot to live up to, and if you don't live up to your name, then you'll be stuck with Skunk. I'll name you Skunk, and you'll regret it the rest of your miserable life." He turned his head clear back and eyed me, and then took a few tentative steps. We saw it around a little, but he was going the direction I aimed. I tried the brakes, and they worked. Maybe he was green broke after all. I'd see. Maybe he'd end up named Critter after all. I was pretty tense. I headed for the lockup, loaded the double-barreled short scatter gun into my saddle sheath, checked on the butcher, who was staring at me, and headed out. Rusty would feed him in the morning. I was a posse of one again. I rode into a burst of moonlight. Behind me, the wounded town of Doubtful slumbered. A light was lit at Maxwell's, and the rest of the town was bleak and quiet, and dying. I didn't feel up to the task of rescuing a whole town. But sometimes we are given tasks that are bigger than we know how to do, and we've got to try. I rode over to Sanders' place first, hoping to get a glimpse of the buggy tracks. But I couldn't make any sense of anything, even with some moonlight. The only thing I had going for me was a hunch or two. Heading for the railroad was too easy. Iceberg wouldn't risk it. Getting on a train was too easy. Once telegrams got shuffled around, he and his partner in crime would get caught somewhere, somehow. Where then? I turned Skunk north, and he didn't get the message and was inclined to head for Turks, so I warned him again. You better behave or you're Skunk, not Critter. He rotated an ear back to catch all that, and then stepped smartly toward the north, where I wished to go. Maybe him and me would get along. It proved to be a real nice July night, with lots of stars and a half moon. I couldn't hardly get lost, and the night was so pleasant I didn't even feel real tired. Once in a while I stopped Skunk. He didn't want to stop, but I had my ways, and I climbed down and looked for iron tire tracks. I couldn't see any, but that didn't mean much. There had been a fair amount of traffic on that dirt road, and there were hoof prints, wagon tracks, and footprints. Skunk was settling into the trip, walking real pleasant. The moon was clear over to the east by the time I got to the abandoned ranch on Little Gopher Creek. I knew about that place. It was a little north of the Pima County line. Bear, its owner, tried raising crossbred cattle there in what looked to be a splendid grassy range, but it was loaded with Jimson weed, and the cattle kept sickening and aborting and failing to grow, and nothing he could do helped much. He finally quit the place, but only after he'd built a substantial log home and barn and pens. Even now, travelers sometimes made themselves comfortable there, but there was no glass in the windows, and pack rats pretty much owned it all. I headed up that road, thinking to rest a bit myself. I'd been awake for pretty much a full day, and needed a little shut-eye. It didn't take long for the old log buildings to rise up in the moonlight. July night wind eddied the air around, and that's when Skunk rotated his ears and shivered. I was real glad he kept quiet. I stopped him at once, and stood there, looking at the slumbering and silent old place, trying to get a sense of what had alerted the horse. Then I saw a horse in the pens. It was staring my way and might whinny at any moment. I slowly turned Skunk around and retreated into a cottonwood grove. I tied Skunk up. For good measure, I collected the scatter gun and edged toward the Bear homestead. It sure was one of the pleasantest nights of the summer, with soft air and a deep peace pervading the whole country. Sanders' ebony buggy gleamed in the moonlight. I'd seen it often enough. It was all too peaceful there. I circled around, choosing the blind kitchen side of the old house to make my approach. The other sides had a wide veranda and a porch deep in moonshadow. That dray stared at me, but didn't whicker, and I thought I'd be all right. I began to figure out ways to make the pinch. I had one wrist manacle, and that was about it. But nothing is ever easy. I edged around real careful, testing boards at Mite Creek and studying on everything. It sure had been a nice place once. I could live there in the white moonlight. I finally got around to the west side and edged toward an open window. Moonlight streamed into the room, and there they were, asleep. He'd made a bed of straw with a blanket over it. She had undone her hair, and now it fell loose over her white shoulders. The moonlight seemed to erase years from her body, making her smooth and young and maidenly. He lay beside her in the white light, looking younger himself. Her arm fell loosely over his back. Their clothes were stacked off to one side, and his holster lay nearby, but not within easy reach. I slipped back from the window and worked around to the door frame, which now lacked a door. I readied my scatter gun and then raced into that room. I'd get there before Iceberg could get himself together and reach for the holster. And it was easier than that. They had awakened, but neither had moved. They saw me. Saw my scatter gun.
I knew it would come to this.
I gotta take you in. I reached over and collected his holster and the revolver in it. That sure was an awkward moment. They were my prisoners, so I couldn't give them privacy, but they didn't seem to mind. They slowly got up and dressed, even as the eastern heavens began to lighten. It was just before dawn. Then, after she had laced her shoes and stood, I kissed her, and they turned to face me.
It was worth it. Whatever happens to me, it was worth it for this one night of joy.
What was likely to happen to her was a hanging, but I didn't say so. It might depend on who shot her husband and whether she had been a part of it. That would be for the court to sort out. I motioned him outside and into a serene dawn, one of those summer dawns when the whole world is hushed and waiting to leap into splendor. We headed out to the buggy. Harness the dray. Iceberg nodded. He eyed my shotgun briefly, knew I was well aware of possibilities, and set to work. I eyed the buggy. As I expected, there were some canvas sacks in the box behind the seat. I lifted one and found it heavy and peered in. A mess of gold coins glinted up at me. Iceberg slid a bridle onto the draft horse and then a collar, and then he tightened a surcingle and ran the lines back. It took a few minutes for him to finish the task and back the horse to the buggy and hook him up. Delphinium watched quietly. Iceberg finished and awaited instructions. I thought maybe to manacle his right wrist to her left one, but I saw no need. If they tried anything at all, I'd do it. Get in and drive to Doubtful. I'll be following along. Iceberg snapped the lines over the croup of the dray, and it started obediently, picking up a brisk pace while I rode beside. I didn't expect trouble. This pair, which had imposed their own sullen hurt upon the world around them, even to the point of death and mayhem, had been transformed. Yesterday, Iceberg would have tried to kill me. Today, Iceberg was resigned to his fate and oddly at peace. Whatever had happened, it was too late to save him. There would be a reckoning back in Doubtful. They knew that and somehow accepted it, or at least were resigned to it. They didn't talk much, but sometimes they held hands, and I had nothing to say to them. I had all three now. Butcher, who killed two people and my horse and robbed me. Iceberg, who'd wanted to be sheriff and strangled Doubtful to death the way he'd strangled other towns. And Delphinium, who'd set it all in motion with her loathing of what she secretly yearned for. When I thought about what they'd done, I quit feeling a little tender toward them. That was just about the longest ride I'd ever had. I felt Skunk grow real weary under me, but he kept on going, like Critter. The dray pulling the buggy was wearing out too, partly because that buggy was loaded with a lot of gold.
Skunk, you've passed the test. From now on, you're Critter.
We got into Doubtful late in the afternoon, and I steered him toward my sheriff's office. Rusty, he saw us coming and rushed outside. Get them explosives out of the other cell, and if you blow yourself up, do a good job of it. He rushed in, and I watched while Berg helped Delphinium out and helped her walk into my lair. I put down a carriage weight and hefted some gold and brought that in. Rusty, he had parked the gun cotton and nitro on my desk and was taking them two prisoners down to the other cell while the butcher watched, amazed. I watched Rusty lock up the lovers, and then he helped me haul all that back-busting gold inside.
What's the story?
They discovered life too late. And that's all there is to it. Well, I still have a job. And they even raised my pay by $5.
The whole town was real glad to see the gold back in the bank along with the greenbacks. And glad to see the three in jail that started all the trouble. The directors named our mayor, George Waller, president of the bank, and he got the doors open real fast, and it was business as usual. There's money in Doubtful. They buried Hubert Sanders real good with lots of wreaths and speeches, and the bank paid the freight. Rusty, he is no longer a deputy. I appointed him under-sheriff with a $2 raise, and he's happy as can be. I'm looking around for a couple deputies now, not my old ones who aren't worth spit. The trial's coming up, and I don't know who'll swing and who won't. There's some feeling about Delphinium. She set the trouble in motion, but didn't really know what sort of kindling she'd touched a match to. It was Iceberg's gun that killed Sanders. I'd guess the jury will spare her, but give her some time in the pen at Rawlins where she can think about undoing all the trouble she started. Ralston's Opera House is doing just fine. That Royal Arabian Nights show packed them in, especially after I starred in the beheading act. Ralston told me that was the first show that made some money for him. When it left town, it traveled safely up to Casper, and that's the last I heard of it. I never did see Ambrosia again, or Zelda Xanadu when she hired onto that show, but that's how it is with show people. You can make friends with them for a few days, and away they go, and you never see them again. The next show rolled in on schedule, and I'll see it one of these days. It's called Joe Gibson's Floradora Girls, and it's mostly comic sketches and a lot of dancing by ladies with big hips and skinny waists. I might fall for one or two of them ladies, too, but I know it'll be real temporary. Ralston's Opera House sure changed Doubtful. All sorts of interesting people started coming to town and entertaining us. We all heard new music, heard good jokes, listened to pretty interesting orchestras, watched some new dance steps, and got taken on little trips whenever a scene was set somewhere like New York or Paris or Tahiti. There was a regular circuit for these shows, and there were comedians like Eddie Foy who went from town to town making people laugh, or singers like Jenny Lind who warbled away and got every randy male in the audience dreaming of a cottage with lilacs and children. So I have to thank Ralston for all that. Instead of a town full of bored cowboys looking for trouble on Saturday nights, we have become a town brimming with entertainments. In fact, because of Ralston's Opera House, Doubtful is booming. There's people moving here just so they can enjoy all the troops that come rolling through town. I think he's doing all right, too. His problem is not getting customers, but getting shows to come to a small town like Doubtful. And sometimes he has to guarantee them a minimum gate. And if he doesn't make the minimum, he has to fork over some of his profit. The bank got the new safe installed real fast and could store the money again. Me, I'm still at Bell's boarding house, and on my dresser are them explosives we took off of Jardine. That gun cotton is still in its enameled box, and the blasting oil is still in the flask. Maybe someday I'll have cause to use that stuff. Cotton Pickings, Book 4, Massacre Mountain, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2011, William W. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2012, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Ken Jackson, David Coyne, Stephen Carpenter, Faith Potts, Richard Rowan, Jeff Allen, Bradley Smith, Mort Shelby, Christopher Graybill, Tim Pabone, Karen Carbone, Gregory Gorton, David Harris, James Konacek, Dylan Lynch, Terrence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Tim Carlin, Patrick Bussing, Nick DePinto, Michael John Casey, Gary Tells, Colleen Delaney, and Johann Detweiler. Directed by Ken Jackson. Book adapted for graphic audio by Doug Crinslin. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Allison Thomas. Original music by Johann Detweiler and Dorothy Dash. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed Cotton Pickings, be sure to look for the series Sidewinders, as well as The Loner, available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pumped titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. Keep listening for previews of other graphic audio thrillers.
Thanks for talking to me, Scratch. It eased my troubled mind a little.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
You probably thought I was gonna ask you to let me go, didn't you?
It wouldn't have done you any good.
I know that. That's why I didn't waste my time. You're not the sort of man who'd turn on his friends for a woman.
No, I sure ain't.
But what about a woman who knows where there's a fortune in greenbacks and gold?
When Scratch is confronted with a woman of deadly charm and persuasion, he contemplates throwing away everything he's ever known.
Paul would come after us.
You think so?
I know he would. He tried to track us down, sure as shooting.
I suppose I could wait a few more days. Even though being locked up like this is making me awful crazy, Scratch.
Oh, you can do it. Won't be much longer, and then the two of us can be together.
That sounds good.
Witness the ultimate betrayal in Sidewinder 6, Texas Bloodshed. Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.